Hey
Hi.
guys. Hello. Oh man. It's been so long,
I
ladies.
know.
Tell me all about your holidays. What
Oh, Jordan, you go first. 'Cause you have the most exciting news.
Oh yes, I do. I got engaged.
Woo!
That's so exciting.
Thank
Congratulations,
you.
boo boo.
Wasn't expecting it at all. Like, didn't think anything was gonna happen. Wink, wink. But
How did you been
oh,
picking out rings online and like sending him
she was
links?
kidding. She was
I love
kidding.
it. No, I know. I know. I was
Oh.
just I knew that there was a joke in there, but I was like, was it that they talked about it the day before? Was it that she's been
Oh, got it.
sending out her links to rings she wants?
It was just that we've gone ring shopping quite a bit, and I've been sending him all the links. But I and so not, and I knew he bought the ring, but I didn't know when it would actually happen. But I knew it was coming soon.
Oh, that's
So,
right, because you found it.
yeah, I
Oh,
found him
yeah, I
online after
forgot.
being a Snoopy girlfriend. But whatever. Now I'm a Snoopy fiance.
Oh, shit. Is it fun to say? Do you like saying fiance?
Fiance,
Level
yes.
up, level up, level
It's
up, level up,
hard
level
because yeah, level up really. I'm used to like in conversation, like when I refer to Alex as my boyfriend, I'm like, wait, he's not my boyfriend anymore. He is my fiance.
It sounds so much more important. He's
It
my
does.
fiance. Don't
Fiance,
talk
like
to him like that. That's my fiance.
fiance. Yeah,
It's like that
no.
John Mulaney skit. I
Oh
feel like
yeah,
I always come back to
that's
the John
my
Mulaney skit.
wife.
It sounds so much better than "Can my girlfriend come?"
It really does.
It does.
Oh,
Oh, aren't they
oh, John
divorced
Mulaney
now?
had a baby, you guys.
Oh, he did. Isn't he
He
divorced
did.
from her now, though? Yeah, but
Yeah.
it's not with her. It's with Emily or Olivia
That's
Munn.
right. It's from Olivia
Oh,
Munn. I forgot about that. That's right. That's right.
yes, we love it. We're
What
so excited.
an odd couple combination, in my
I'm here
opinion.
for it, man.
Good for him, is all I can say.
Pete Davidson and Kim Kardashian. You know, I don't just,
Are they
it's
going
all,
strong?
I
I
believe
believe
so.
so.
And Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly just got
Got
engaged.
engaged also.
So
Probably.
all these skinny white dudes are just, it's the year of skinny white
It
dudes.
is. They're just
No.
snatching them all
We
up.
don't need to give any more years to skinny white
No,
dudes.
we don't.
This is the
Unless it's Pete
year.
Davidson. I'm a Pete Davidson fan. Okay. If Ditto,
you
I am
we
too.
lose followers for
I'll
this,
let
I'm
that
sorry, but
strong
no.
body be on top of me at any time.
Wow, same. Are we all sexually attracted to Pete Davidson?
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah,
Oh,
100%.
same. Okay, guys, I'm glad we can finally agree on something.
We can. Look at
Wow.
us coming together in the new year.
We'd
But
all degrade ourselves for Pete Davidson. Good to know. Stevie and I still question your Rock the Johnson choices and Vin Diesel choices.
I don't know why, first of all, I don't know why you guys would ever assume anyone would think Vin Diesel's sexier than somebody else. Number one.
You and my mom.
No, I don't think Vin Diesel's sexy. I don't know why you guys think I think Vin Diesel's sexy. You guys both, if you'll refer back to the episode, you guys both think that my taste in men is Vin Diesel and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And Dwayne The Rock Johnson is hot, but Vin Diesel is like a human pencil. Or like, no, he's not skinny like a pencil, but like he's just plain and bald like a
I think
pencil.
you're thinking of his head is
I am.
eraser
I
like.
sure am. I sure am. That's exactly what I think.
Oh, that's great. Honestly, I thought you did just because that's what Jordan said. So,
Jordan, it's like you
well, I'm
don't even
pretty
know
sure
me.
it's right.
No, it's I'm telling you, it's not.
Okay, well, Emmy, what have you been up to?
What's happened in my life? Let's see. Nothing.
Well, I mean, I assume you had a good
Oh, I
holiday.
had wonderful holidays. I finally got to see some people that I hadn't in a while right before Omicron got really bad. And then Omicron got really bad. And then I didn't see
Yeah.
anybody for a while. And now I'm starting to I saw my my parents for the first time last weekend for the first time in quite a while. Yeah, that was really, really nice. What about you, Stevie?
I actually have some big news.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, you're pregnant.
I'm so
I
excited.
am moving out of my apartment.
after my lease is done.
And?
Dun, dun, dun. I am moving into the apartment above the preschool that I work at. And oh. I'm taking over as lead teacher. I get to redo the classroom however I want, come up with my own curriculum.
Yay.
And I am very, very, very excited.
Oh my God, I'm so happy.
I know, me too. So,
how did this all come to be? You.
Basically, there was a bomb drop from one of my other coworkers, which set in this whole chain of events motion, like put everything into motion where I got together with my boss and we were like, okay, what do we do? Let's figure this out. And yeah, I'm going to be taking over.
Well, congratulations.
I'm really excited. Yeah.
Okie dokie, are you guys ready? So I do have to, I'm like looking over it now and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this case. because as some of you know, this is just for the listeners, Jordan and Stevie, you both know this. But I recorded this before Christmas and then it didn't record properly. So this is kind of an old one from me, but it's still a really great and important case. And this is part of our hometown series. So Stevie and Jordan. Jordan did one from her hometown in Lake Stevens. Stevie did one from Kanaka Joe from her hometown in Freddie Harbor, Washington. And mine is from my hometown, which is Seattle. So it was really hard to choose one crime because crimes just happen here constantly. So I was trying to think of one that happened like when I was a kid that was really important. And I hardly remember this. I remember talking about it with my mom briefly or listening to my parents, talk about it. But I was like 4.5 years old when this happened. It was right before we moved to Switzerland.
Oh, easy, humble brag. Just right before we moved to Switzerland.
Right before I went jet setting off to Europe. Yeah. I decided that since Seattle is like serial killer capital of the United States, all these things, I was like, okay, I'm not going to do a serial killer because everyone knows all the serial killers. So I decided that I'm going to talk about one that happened close to home and is sort of involves a spooky bridge in Seattle that is known for being a very dangerous and sort of a sad place with a sad history. Okay, so some background information. Jordan and Steve, both of you guys have driven the Aurora Bridge before, I would assume.
Yes.
Okay, so it's a really highly trafficked bridge. It's one of the most highly trafficked bridges in the city of Seattle proper. And it's on the north side of Seattle, and it connects the north side to the downtown area. And it's really like a... It goes down Highway 99, which is also called Aurora, but it's when it's in this part of Seattle. So if you're in North Seattle, it'll often be referred to as Aurora rather than Highway 99. If you keep going south, it gets referred to as Pacific Highway. So if you're from the area at all, you're probably familiar with the street that this is on. I shouldn't even call it a street. It's like a major arterial. One second. I need to sip my beer. My mouth's dry. The Aurora Bridge sits at its highest point about 176 feet from the ground. And when it's at its highest point, it's actually above water. So it's above not the Montlake Cut, but the Ballard Cut. It's really well known as being the home of the Fremont Troll. So if you're a tourist to Seattle, or even if you just live here, you have definitely probably been to the Fremont Troll. That area is the Aurora Bridge on the north side. The north side of the bridge is where the Fremont Troll is, and it's right where it, you know, sort of stops being road and starts being bridge. Now, this area is really, like, cutesy. There's always lovely little families there taking pictures, you know, putting their finger inside the troll's giant nose. And for those of you who have not ever seen the Fremont Troll, you should look it up because it's really, really cool. But it's always stacked with people. I drive by there pretty regularly and there's at least, you know, two or three groups of people there taking pictures. But maybe you will have a very different view of that area and that little landmark once you hear this story. Now I'm going to be talking about three different stories, but I'm going to focus on one that involves the Aurora Bridge because I think it's one of the most tragic events. So the year's 1998 It is November 27th. It's the beginning of the holiday season, and many people from North Seattle are on their way to downtown on the number 359 bus, which leads from North Seattle all the way into like the main shopping area of downtown. There's some big malls like Westlake Center, and it goes right through there. So it's a really popular, bus line. I don't know. Did you ever ride the bus in Seattle? Were you ever guys bus ride? I mean, I know that both of you guys grew up in other places, and I know that like teenagerhood is when I, for instance, rode the bus most. But have you guys ever been bus riders in the city?
I've had like two like unpleasant, not necessarily, not like unpleasant, but like two experiences on the bus where I'm just like, God, I hope that never happens again. And mm-hmm. I'm like, nope, I don't want to be on the bus anymore. Yep. So I'm not like, I believe in the bus system and I think it's great and I think people should take the bus. I'm just not one of those people because every single time I've been on the bus, I've had to interact with somebody who I didn't want to interact
not
with.
Not your favorite person.
Exactly.
I completely agree. And actually, this specific bus line, the 359, which now has a different name, I believe it's the 358 now, which I'm like, you guys just changed it by one number. Like, you might have wanted to rebrand a little bit more after you hear what happened. But I have taken that bus line many times, and I took it all the time when I was a kid in a high schooler to get downtown. If I was going to go see my friends, or if we went on field trips when I was in elementary school, we would take this bus line a lot. And so I'm really pretty familiar with this.
You're pretty bus savvy.
No, I'm not actually bus savvy at all. I'm just familiar with this specific bus line. And I forgot all about this incident. And then years later, I guess when I was just doing the research for this specific story, or when I was reading the Anne Rule book that this is based on, I was like, oh my God, I used to take that all the time as a kid. And the sketchiest shit used to always happen on this specific bus line. And my parents, I remember when I was a teenager, my parents would be like, oh, be careful on the 358 because that's where like sketchy shit happens. And that's been, it's partially because of this, but it's also because like one time we had like a gun, there was a dude with a gun on the bus when I was a kid and like nothing happened. It was just like, oh my God, there's a man with a gun on the bus.
It's just jarring.
Yeah. And anyway, so what happened was, on this day, on November 27th of 1998, there were 35 passengers aboard the 359 minding their own business as they approached the Aurora Bridge going more than 50 miles an hour. Remember, this is a highway, so it's high speeds. Suddenly, a tall, slender man in the front of the bus stands up and sort of casually walks towards the driver. Mere seconds after getting onto the Aurora Bridge, there's a scream, a loud bang, and suddenly the bus begins to veer sharply to the right. I know. It breaks through the bridge's barriers, and it falls about 50 feet off the side of the bridge and straight down into the Fremont neighborhood, where it smashes right into the side of an apartment building, bounces off the building, and lands below. This is what's called an articulated bus, so it's got two pieces that are connected by a sort of accordion in the middle. So one piece sort of got stuck in a tree, and one piece bounced off the building and crashed down into the street below. Truly, this could have been so much more deadly than it ended up being. It was still an incredibly deadly and tragic accident. Accident's not the right word, you'll see. But it could have been so much worse if it wasn't for the quick thinking of one man in particular. So anyway, because this is in like a popular residential neighborhood in Seattle, people just come running immediately. And the way that it's described looking like is like a plane crash is what people said. There was like no rhyme or reason to the structure of the bus anymore. It had been snapped into pieces. There was rubble everywhere. Pieces of apartment building were falling off. People who witnessed it saw body parts on the ground. Ugh. Yeah, mangled body parts. There was blood everywhere. And as Good Samaritans rushed to the scene to help all the visible victims that they could, they found that as pieces of metal were moved aside, there was just more and more injured people in dire need of help everywhere. spectators. I listened to a couple interviews of people who saw it, people who were first responders, and then actual first responders, you know, like EMTs. They remember watching. So the people who watched, the people just in the apartment buildings who were walking their dogs nearby, remember seeing first responders get there really quickly, apparently. Like, there was a whole thing about, like, what heroes the – I mean, I think first responders are always heroes, but this was such a time-sensitive matter that – like, they really came through. But the way that I'm gonna describe to you guys how they sort of doled out their life-saving support, and it's so brutal because – so anyway, here's what happened is that they quickly came, and the first responders had to start tagging bodies that were found. There were victims who were injured but not seriously injured, and they didn't need immediate life-saving support. There were those victims that were really critically injured but whom they believed could be saved. And then there were those who were either visibly dead or so critically injured that they chose not to waste the precious time trying to resuscitate them. I know.
Could you imagine having
to make
that
decision and having there be so many casualties? I mean, it sounds like war to me. Like, it almost sounds like, you know, like a bombing went off. Okay. All in all, after they accounted for everybody on the bus, after they, you know, figured out if they were missing anybody, because it took a really long time for them to even know how many people they were looking for, right? There was 35 on the bus, so 32 of them made it out alive. 32 of them, some of them, I mean, seriously, seriously injured for the rest of their lives, bedridden, hospital-ridden, but alive. 32 people made it out. Unfortunately, 3 people did not. The 3 people who did not make it out of the accident alive were, at first, they discovered Mark McLaughlin. He was the longtime driver of bus route number 359, and he had worked for the Seattle Metro for many, many years. He was described by his friends as a really spirited and fun-loving man. County Executive Ron Sims, I guess, also knew him, and he ended up calling McLaughlin an individual who loved life and people. Everyone he met, everyone he knew, only had good things to say about him. No one had a bad thing to say about Mark McLaughlin.
That makes it so much worse.
He was found with multiple bullet wounds in his chest. Which obviously that is not, you know, the bus crash is not the reason that he died, so we'll get into that. The next man that was found was 69-year-old Herman Liebelt, and I still can't figure out how to say it because, honestly, it's been really, really hard to find information on Herman. And I just think that that's such a sad thing because he's sort of like the lost, you know, guy from this whole horrible incident. Not a lot was written about him. He didn't have a lot of friends, didn't have a lot of family. And so he just kind of was, like, forgotten. And he did not die immediately. He was one of those people that looked so injured that they didn't necessarily help him right away. But he did pull through in the hospital for 3 days, where he eventually did die from complications with all of his wounds and his injuries. He was taken to Harborview Hospital. So for any of those of you who are from the area, Harborview is like – it's a huge hub of healthcare in the Pacific Northwest. But it's like if you can't make it at Harborview, you can't make it anywhere. They have the best doctors in the world. They have such a good critical care unit. So he unfortunately passed away. Now the third person – I don't want to call them a victim. He was – this tall, slender man in his 40s, and it took quite a while for him to be identified. But a couple days after the incident, it was released that he was found with a bullet hole in his head, a bullet hole which authorities suspected and would eventually confirm was self-inflicted. Ugh. I know. So upon their initial investigation of this third body, it was found that he was laying with a small .38 semi-automatic pistol, and after his person was searched, they found a second small .38 semi-automatic pistol. The first had been fired many times, and I believe there were no more bullets in the chambers, and I believe it was a 5-bullet chamber, which means five bullets had been shot. But the second one, the second .38, was completely untouched. There were all the bullets still in the chamber. Nothing had been fired. And after fingerprints were tested on both guns against the corpse of the third man, it was confirmed that he was most certainly the person who had fired all five bullets. The vast majority of the testimony that they have is from survivors from right before the crash is very limited because it all just happened so fast. And like, I always think about this in true crime, but I would never remember anything if I didn't know I was supposed to be paying attention. You know what I mean? Like, why would you know you're supposed to be paying attention to what happened right before? I wouldn't remember literally anything ever. Or like what I did 2 weeks ago. I don't, unless I could look at my texts, unless I could like look at my phone, my computer, and talk to my friends, like I or Jared, I would have no idea what I was doing this night 2 weeks ago. The testimony is kind of like, they don't have great testimony because everyone was just sitting around on the bus, closing their eyes, reading a newspaper, right? Because no one expects to be thrown off of our bridge. But the passengers do recall, for the most part, hearing, oh my God, and then the pop of multiple bullets, at least two, before they were knocked out by the crash or before they could feel, you know, the sudden tug of the bus going right. There's a handful of survivors, especially those who were sitting in the front of the bus, who remember the tall, slender man in the striped shirt and the brown jacket standing up just moments before hearing the pops of the gun. It was clear that whoever this man was, he had fired both the bullets that had killed Mark McLaughlin and himself. So upon further police investigation, and once they released the body to be identified by the public, it was found that the man who had been, who had, you know, committed this horrible act and who had killed himself was Silas Cool. Now, Silas Cool was a, not a misnomer. It was, his real name was Gary Silas Cool. What they found as they investigated into him is that he was this guy who was slowly slipping further and further away from reality. They ended up finding his apartment, which he rented in the university district, which for those of you who don't know, that's where UW is. It's a little college neighborhood in Seattle. Back in the 90s, it was not a great place.
Still not.
I don't know. I lived there for many years and never felt that unsafe. But that unsafe. It was a lot worse in the 90s. And he lived there during that time. He lived in a very small one-bedroom apartment. He paid about $400 a month. And all the money that he received came from his family. So he had very rich parents back on the East Coast. And he basically had like a trust that would give him about like $600 a month, which is not a lot, even in 1998 terms. So if he's spending $400 on his apartment, that means he has about $200 left. He's not working.
He's living very modestly.
But when police do figure out where his apartment is and they do, you know, gain access to it, they find that he is also, he's also not living in reality, really. He has put tinfoil, you know, covering up all of his windows. He has begun to really, really hoard quite a bit, especially bathroom products like lotions and salves and anything like skin related. He has been hoarding products for years and years. In his bathroom, you can barely move through. It's just stacks and stacks of old products.
Well, there was definitely some mental health.
There was some serious mental health issues going on that I think because he did not, nobody knew him. No one could see him slipping into his mental health issues worse and worse, right? No one was there to sort of track the decline. And he had his walls plastered in like pornographic images. He didn't have a bed. He just slept on a mat on the floor. It was really unhealthy, I think, by like normal standards, the way that he was living. But apparently from the outside, from people who didn't see him in passing, he was this good-looking, well put together, I don't know, just unassuming. I think this is just a good lesson in that things are happening behind closed doors that we know absolutely nothing about. Things are happening in people's minds that we know absolutely nothing about. And don't let looks fool you, I guess. So yeah, so he was in a serious state of mental decline when this all happened. How he got access to the guns, no one is exactly sure. That being said, it's easy as book to get a gun, so like I would guess he just went and bought it. I don't believe they found receipts for any of it though. But he did own two. He had the first gun that had killed both Mark McLaughlin and himself, and then he had the second gun that he had not fired. He was showing signs that something was going on, right? There was another incident on the bus where he had shown his gun to a customer who was sitting on the bus, another passenger, and he had said that he was going to take out all the mean people. So there was, right. And that had been reported to the Metro. I don't believe it was really followed up on because obviously he was still allowed to ride. But yeah, that was a very concerning incident that did sort of foreshadow that something like this may happen. Yeah, and I just feel like, oh man, we need to take that shit seriously because it could have avoided this huge, horrible tragedy. Mark McLaughlin, I really want to focus on him, is remembered as just both in the Seattle Metro and by his family as like the most loving, wonderful man. He was a father to two sons. He was a divorced. He had been married to another woman who was in a new relationship. Like just had good things on the horizon. And he had been with the Metro for like 15 years. So he was also a senior staff member there. You know, he wasn't that far away from retiring. He had good things in his future, which makes it even more sad. And he had people who really loved and depended on him. And now, okay, I found exactly one article that was written about Herman, the 69-year-old man who had passed away from his injuries after the bus. And Herman was described by the very few people who they could get in contact with as just a sweet, quiet man who wanted to live life very peacefully. That's all he wanted. He loved to read. He didn't disturb anybody. The people who knew him said that he was kind, quiet, and just wanted, and I heard something on TikTok the other day that was like, just wanted to live life slowly. You know, just wanted to live life slowly. You know, he didn't leave this crazy impression on, you know, this world. And I think that it's important that we recognize people who just lived life quietly and slowly and still deserve to live and be recognized and loved. And I was just really bummed that I could find so little on him because he was a, you know, he deserves his day in the sun. He deserves his comeuppance, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so obviously at this point they cannot charge Silas with anything. His body is taken by his parents. There is a massive funeral procession held for Mark McLaughlin. Actually, the whole Metro system shut down for a couple hours in the afternoon, and they had a bus procession go through the city where all of his coworkers, his bosses, his employees, they had basically a parade for him. And a lot of people in the city showed up, and apparently his family was very they were very moved to see what an effect he had had on the whole city of Seattle, community, and just what an important guy he was. And I don't know, I just think this whole thing's very sad. But that being said, there were at least three people from the crash who have lifelong injuries, who are either in long-term care facilities, right? Or who have lost the entire use of their, basically are paralyzed, right? So no longer are able to walk. So I do want to make sure that we recognize that just because some people didn't lose their lives, they really lost their freedom, basically, in this whole accident. Or this accident's not the right word. This whole crime scene. Finally, just to wrap this all up, I wanted to talk about Aurora and the Aurora Bridge because this is not the only horrendous, horrible thing that has happened here. And it's really kind of well known in Seattle as being a place with bad energy. It is the number one city, or it's the number one bridge in the city of Seattle that people have completed suicide on. And it's because it's that 175 feet over water. It is, you're guaranteed essentially that if you go to one of the highest places that you will pass away if you jump from there. So I didn't get the exact number. I didn't want to look too much into it, but there's been quite a few suicides that have happened on that bridge. Another incident of note that is really
The ducks,
exactly. Oh, I don't know if you guys remember, but September.
I remember.
Yes.
Yeah, that wasn't even not that long ago.
No, it was September 25th of 2015. I actually remember I was trying to get I was trying to get onto Aurora when this was all happening. I was downtown trying to take an entrance onto it. And I got stuck in it for about 45 minutes to an hour. No one was moving. And I remember thinking, like, what's going on? Blah, blah, blah. And then,
why am I so inconvenient?
Yeah. And then I went home and I read this and I was like, oh, my God. Well, what happened was that there was a bus full of foreign exchange students from Austria, China, Indonesia, and Japan. And they were driving along the Aurora Bridge on that Thursday, the 25th of September in 2015. And there was also this thing called the duck. I don't know if you guys have this in your cities, listeners out there, but the duck is a tour bus company. And the buses go from being cars to boats. So you can drive them into the water and they're semi-aquatic, basically.
Yeah.
They call them
ride the duck?
Amphibious vehicles. Yeah. Ride the duck is what it's called. Now, the duck company has been like fraught with lawsuits. All these people keep getting injured on them. Duck drivers die. All these horrible things. So the duck.
I'm surprised they're still functioning.
They're not in Seattle, I don't believe, anymore.
Oh, they're not.
I haven't seen a duck in years.
Mm-mm. Haven't seen a duck in years.
I thought that was due to COVID, but.
Nope. They used to be. I think it was even before COVID. They were already in the process of shutting down because of this and because of just their myriad of. horrible accidents that have happened.
The ducks just suck.
Yeah. The duck sucks. Don't ride a duck. If you have a duck system in your city, if you have like the duck.
I think
they have it in
Boston.
It's Chicago. I think they take it into
Maybe they have their shit together, but.
I don't know. If they're using the same duck buses that they use in Seattle, it's like the inherently in the design of the buses that they just constantly break down and are like causing injury. Anyway, so the college students are. On the Aurora Bridge, this duck vehicle is on the Aurora Bridge. When it swerves into the charter bus full of these international college students, and it killed four of them, and it injured almost everybody else on the duck and on the bus. It made international news. I don't know if you guys saw the video footage of it, but it was horrible. The bus was, you know, turned on its side, It was basically got smashed into and then blocked both lanes of traffic on the Aurora Bridge, which is a big deal.
Those lanes of traffic are so teeny tiny.
They are so small.
It's like three lanes in each direction, which is, first of all, it should just be two lanes in each direction because those are the tiniest lanes of all time. They're horrifying. You're right up against the guardrail constantly, feeling like your mirror is going to scratch against it. If you're in the far right lane, it's horrible. Yeah. It's the worst.
Pure anxiety.
Yeah, pure anxiety. I hate it. So the four people who were killed in the accident were Claudia Derschmidt. She was 49 and from Austria. There was Privando Putradanto, 18, from Indonesia. There was Mami Sato, 36, from Japan. And Runji Song, 17, from China. The charter bus was heading towards downtown while the duck was heading northbound towards North Seattle when it happened. And it happened around 11 a.m. Yeah, it was horrible. Now, there was also long-term, I just feel like we don't talk about this enough in big things like that. There were people who, again, 50 people were injured, and a lot of them were in critical condition even days after the accident. Did come through, which is awesome, but many of these people were seriously injured and will have complications for the rest of their lives. And those are just three of the really intense and awful things that have happened on the Aurora Bridge. The last thing I do want to say, though, and this is for Mark McLaughlin and his family, is that if Mark McLaughlin had not immediately swerved when he had gotten shot, if he had continued, you know, if he had taken a moment to be shocked, he didn't die immediately. So it took a little bit of time. If he had kept going, it would have undoubtedly killed many more people on the bus, if not everybody. Again, they only fell from 50 feet, which is still horrifying when you're in an articulated bus. But because of his quick thinking, swerving off and not going over the actual cut of water.
And into the water.
Yeah, he saved a ton of lives. So that's another reason that he's just been touted as a real hero, other than that he's just was a wonderful man and was, you know, just doing his job serving the community of Seattle. But yeah, that's the story of Mark McLaughlin. That's the story of Herman Leibel and, you know, the horrible fate that they received at the hands of Silas Cool.
Wow. Thank you, Emmy.
Mm-hmm. Anytime, babies. Okay, my friends.
If you guys want to hear Stevie's private noodle slurping OnlyFans website, you can follow us for more content on Instagram at
Death in the NW Podcast.
If you want to email us and let us and send us sound bites of you slurping up noodles as loudly as you can. You can email us at
Death and the NW Podcast at
gmail.com.
And I don't know, that's it, right? Are we anywhere else?
Yeah, Facebook. Then Google us.
You can Facebook.
Facebook's
us.
For oldies.
If you wanted to message us on Facebook and send us a gif of you slurping noodles with your butt. That's your south mouth. With your south mouth.
Don't send that.
Yep, send us a gif of you slurping noodles with your south mouth. You can do that at
I think my bread is burning.